This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
To Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to read a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I am going to be talking to Paul Rosoli, and this is a one strange guy. He hugs anacondas, and he's all about conservation, so I'm looking forward to talking to him about his wonderful book called The Girl and the Tiger. But right now I get to turn to Joy on Paper's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, because I've been getting questions from everybody, legal questions, and Bill is here to help us understand the importance of intellectual property. Hi, Bill. Okay, hi, Bill. What happened to Bill? Bill? Well, we're going to find out in a few minutes, so we're going to get him right back. If necessary, we can just look. I think he's calling. Is he calling back? Because, you know, intellectual property is so important for all of you. And there have been lots of questions lately about what's going on in the world of intellectual property. So some very exciting things. And I want to thank everybody who sent in a question. And I also want to take this moment to thank all of the people who were involved with the NaNoWriMo and tell them that their book is on the way. For those of you who have been sending me messages and I promised you a book, well, now your book is on the way because you completed NaNoWriMo, and I am so very proud of you. I got messages last night, and I was so thrilled with everybody who finished them. Is Bill Larson on the line yet? Bill, are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we got you. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, it's such a beautiful day in Florida. People, you know, I've been hearing about bad weather up north, but you almost want to just sneak out and get on that boat today, don't you?
Absolutely. It's gorgeous today.
Isn't it? It's just one of these glorious Florida days. Well, I've been getting, of course, questions for you all the time. And one of the ones that popped up from quite a few people, they all heard about this copyright lawsuit that is around Top Gun. And this is an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So tell us what happened here, because you wouldn't think that a major motion picture company would get this situation.
Get it wrong.
Yeah. How did this happen?
Yeah, that's, I'm sure somebody's head's going to roll over that.
So
what happened was they had a license for the use of the story, and apparently it was to expire at a certain point in time. And so there's an argument as to whether or not the license had expired, and now Paramount is free to run the motion picture, which is clearly a derivative of the original work. I think it's silly to argue otherwise. I certainly wouldn't make that argument. But it really goes down to a legal question. It's a legal question of the technicalities of the copyright system and the registration of copyrights and the renewals and then passing them on when people die, and it's going to come down to a legal question rather than a factual question as to whether or not the recent movie is a derivative of the first.
Well, most people don't know that the original story was written by an Israeli writer, Ehud Yoneh, and whose film story was turned into Top Gun back in 1983. He's since passed away, but his wife and son have filed this lawsuit because as you say, this new film, it is definitely based on the original. So how can they not say that it, you know, isn't?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're making that position or not. I've kind of read that in the news, but if they are making the position that this recent one is not a derivative of the early one, jury would see through that in about 2 seconds. So that, in my opinion, would not be a valid defense. What I see this case as being is an issue of the technicalities of the copyright registration system and the license that was involved. And on top of everything else, of course, is a lot of money. Obviously, Tom Cruise is one of the greatest actors, if not the greatest actor ever. I'm a big fan of his. But certainly you would think that the folks involved would have handled this in advance in some way. In other words, the Paramount would have, you know, said, hey, you know, this is expired and we intend to make another movie and you're not getting a part of it. Or the other side who owned the rights, when they heard right away, would have chimed in and said, hey, we need to get a piece of the action here. So it seems to me there's a fumble on both sides, and whether that was intentional or somebody just overlooked the technicalities of what needed to be done concerning the rights involved, that's going to wash out in court. But I see it as a legal issue, not a factual issue.
Well, the thing is, of course, the originally, they had 35 years, right? It was for 35 years.
Yeah, 35 years.
And the new film comes out 3 years after that 35-year period. Now, you would think, boy, you would want to have this all tied up before you start filming.
Exactly. And so the question is going to become, you know, when is that exact date that the license expired? Because if the studio, for example, was thinking about doing it before the license expired, then you would think that they're caught inside the license. If the license had expired and it's been a while, and then all of a sudden it pops into your brain, hey, let's go ahead and do that, that's a different thing. But typically these movies are planned years and years in advance. So I think that there's going to be an issue there as to when is the exact date of termination and when did they first start planning on doing the second movie to determine whether or not it falls inside the license.
Well, you would think that Paramount would have been able to get the rights to make the new film at a reasonable price. I would say $1 million or something. I'm sure the family might have jumped at that. But now Paramount is looking at a much larger payout to this family because the film has been such a hit and has made an absolute fortune.
Yeah, so there's a lot more money involved. So these are certainly the things that you want to take care of, you know, in advance, and that's why we have these lawsuits, is because things are missed. You know, I've been practicing 30 years, and I can't figure out why such big companies sometimes can make such big mistakes. And if you talk to a lot of lawyers, they'll tell you the bigger the company, the bigger the mistake. We have the little teeny companies that seem to take care of business. So if this is just something that fell through the cracks that they didn't think about, then that's an enormous problem for the legal department. If it was planned in advance, then you've got to think that they were considering doing this for a reason and they had it planned out. But either way, it's not going to look real great in front of a jury. So my guess is it's definitely going to settle on a confidential settlement. It'll just disappear.
I think so. But I think the family's going to get a lot more than they would have taken if Paramount had come to them a few years before.
It's typical. Yeah, it's typical. You get more if you sue later than you would get up front. But, you know, you have to go through all the aggravation of litigation. Now, obviously, they got big-time contingent lawyers who are going to handle that suit. I'm going to keep an eye on it because it's going to be very interesting from a legal standpoint rather than a factual standpoint, exactly how they're going to balance all of the laws. Because the laws changed over the years. The copyright law is constantly changing. And so we have to take into consideration whether everybody, you know, jumped through all the hoops that they were supposed to, according to the law and according to the license agreement they had. So it'll be interesting to see how this falls apart. But I think before we get a resolution on any issues, that it'll quietly go away in settlement.
Well, is that typical? To originally Paramount took it for 35 years. I thought, and when I was in Hollywood, I worked on a few films, and I know that they paid the authors, because I adapted some books to film, and I know that they paid the authors, and that was it, and that was like, they paid the authors really a very small amount of money. I mean, I was really shocked at what authors were selling their stories, you know, their books for. But it seemed that they were permanent, that it wasn't like for a time period.
Right. So in this case, the parties agreed on 35 years for whatever reason. So you would think that, you know, all along that time, as the royalties were still accruing through the continued use of the first movie, that the author's family was continuing to get money. I don't know for sure, but you would think that they had a continuing royalty there. Depends on the terms of the license, whether it was just a one-shot deal or whether they got continuing royalties. But for reasons we'll probably never know, the parties agreed on 35 years as the length of the license, which is very interesting. The reasons for that are probably not important, because once it's agreed, that's it. It doesn't matter what the reason is. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out in terms of the legal part of it. The factual part of it, I think, is pretty conclusive. There's no doubt that it's a derivative work. That's I would never make that argument in front of a jury. Anybody would look at this movie and say this is clearly based on the earlier movie. It's the same actor, right?
Yeah.
How can you get around that part? It's Tom Cruise, for goodness sake. So
argue
that this is not a derivative.
Amazing. 35 years later, he looks the same. Just crazy.
Yeah, he does. He looks great, and we're actually the same age, which is funny. I love Tom Cruise. I don't think he's ever made a bad movie.
No.
He's my favorite actor in the world, and so I'm sure this doesn't rest on his shoulders. This is somebody in legal that fumbled the ball, probably, and they're going to have to figure out how to fix it.
Well, I would say that the Yonet family had a good lawyer back then, because that was clever to put that in.
Yeah, sometimes stuff just slips through the cracks. I mean, that's just the way it happens. You have, big businesses and a lot's going on, and things slip through the cracks. It happens all the time. And that's why we see these lawsuits, because these old documents may be buried away. The people that originally drafted them are all dead or retired or gone, and people forgot they even exist. And then you get rolling on the next deal, the next job, and you just kind of forget that there was this piece of paper from way back when, and then boom, it pops up, and this happens routinely. So it's just something that happens in business.
Okay, well, some lawyer in Hollywood's in trouble, and some lawyer
both sides seem to have a little bit of answering to do to why this wasn't buttoned up beforehand.
But
that's why we have lawsuits, because things don't get buttoned beforehand. And that's why we have so many lawsuits. So,
but the contingency lawyers are going to be happy, I think, with the settlement that's going to.
It's going to settle.
It's going to settle.
I mean, it's going to settle. It's not something you want to drag through the courts in front of everybody.
So, if somebody comes to you and they have a book that somebody in Hollywood wants, would you recommend something like this? Put 35 years in it? That's a good idea.
Well, if you're representing the author, we want perpetuity, right? We want till the conclusion of the copyright, when the copyright expires. Once the copyright expires, you can't enforce a license. So from an author's perspective, it would say, yes, it would be the life of the copyright. From the other side's perspective, they're going to want to say, no, this is just a couple of years, and this is a one-shot deal, one and done, here's your money, that's it. If we do anything else, you don't get anything else. This has been a big argument in Hollywood over the years, from spinoffs, from sitcoms, and all. So this is just a reoccurring theme in Hollywood, these kinds of arguments. And fighting over copyrights and what is or what is not a derivative, and what people meant when they entered into licensing agreements, how long they were going to be, and what constitutes and what does not constitute a derivative work. So this is just one of a long saga of lawsuits coming out of Hollywood, rehashing the same old issue.
And now. For you, for somebody who's dealing with this subject of intellectual property, you have to really try to think in advance. Did you ever think, for example, of Meta, this new Meta thing, that somebody might want to take your book and walk people, or your movie, and have people walking through the film? So this is a whole another angle of where your intellectual property might be used.
Exactly. So it's very tough to predict what the future is going to hold scientifically, and science is always ahead of the law. So you do your best when you write licenses to try to incorporate everything under the sun, so that your author gets as much money as possible if that particular work, you know, really goes off and makes a lot of money. And you try the best you can, but, you know, in the words that we use today may not be even exist right now. So 35 years from now, we could be arguing over some new technology that you can't even think about right now. So it's virtually impossible to build that into a license unless you say, you know, just do the old everything under the sun clause. And a lot of times the other side's not going to do everything under the sun because they're gonna have things that they're gonna consider are not derivative works that they don't want to pay on, and they don't want to get roped into a lawsuit. So there's a give and take during the process of negotiating the license, and both sides have to give a little to, you know, come to the middle and reach a deal. And that's where the problem is in trying to predict what the future holds.
When companies now are doing these celebrity endorsements where they have like holograms of celebrities, you know, and they have to get the permission. If the person is a public person, they have to get the permission of the families, like, you know, Elvis's family. If they use his image in a hologram, they have to have permission, right?
Yeah, exactly. So all the famous people, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, you know, all the famous people who have passed away still have rights to their images and their work, so they still have copyrights and all of those things. So, yeah, you can't use them without permission. And you just can't take Elvis's picture and put it on a candy bar and start selling it without permission, because Elvis's heirs are entitled to all of his rights, including his likeness, you know, in addition to all of his copyrights and his songs and his appearances in movies.
How long does that last for? I mean, we can have a hologram of I don't know, Churchill, or is that out too? I mean, what's the time limit?
Well, public figures are exempt. Yeah, public figures are exempt. Okay, so that's why you can, you know, a lot of people go and make the Trumpy bear, right, and go out and sell it. You can kind of.
Are you there, Bill? Okay, we've got a problem. Bill dropped off somewhere. Anyway, I hope that he will bounce back in, and something's wrong with his phone, and we've had this now twice this morning. Anyway, I also will continue talking a little bit more about NaNoWriMo until Bill calls in, because I don't know, something happened to his phone. Anyway, but that's fascinating, isn't it? I was surprised about the Top Gun situation. I remember in Hollywood, I remember a couple of very sad authors who wrote very nice books, and they were paid very small sums, and the films turned into great successes, and they actually didn't even have points, and so it was not a happy situation for some of those writers. So I don't know. Anyway, it looks like we're going to have a situation here with Bill Larson. I'm sorry about that, but this happens, and I had wanted to talk to him also about memoirs, because a few years ago, before the pandemic, I mentioned when Bill was on, we talked about a local author who has written a book about a semi-famous local author has written a book about a very famous local personality, worldwide personality. And it is a memoir, sort of hidden behind a little bit of, I don't know how much it's fiction. At the time when she sent me the book, she asked me for my opinion, and I said, oh my gosh, you can't say that stuff. I think it's too dangerous. And she, I guess during the pandemic, she stewed on it, and she wrote even more. Hi, Bill.
I'm back.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we're having all kinds of technical difficulties today. My goodness.
I don't know why.
Yeah, great big sophisticated radio system and a big sophisticated IP attorney, and we can't keep the phone running.
That's funny. Well, I'm yeah. keeping calm. In the old days, I used to get all nervous about it. But I started talking about this situation with a memoir. Before the pandemic, mm-hmm. I had told you about an author here in town who was writing a memoir of sorts about a very, very famous world-known personality who lives here in our area, just up the street, from us, actually. Very famous. And she wrote it, and when she sent it to me at the time, I said to her, I don't think you should do that, or you should actually at least contact Bill. I don't know if she ever did. She never mentioned it. But after the pandemic, a few months ago, she came back with an updated version that she worked on during the pandemic. And I think the pandemic hit her hard, and this new version is unbelievable. It's really salacious, and I worried about her self-publishing it. So I was mentioned a case there that happened in Massachusetts, in the Superior Court there, about the invasion of privacy case involving a controversial memoir.
Yeah, we talked about this before.
Yeah, so now this lady, she's determined to put this out, and I don't know what's going to happen to her. But what is this case that happened with the girl interrupted author, Susanna Kaysen?
Yeah, same argument that it was a memoir. And in the memoir, she alludes to persons and situations and so forth, which the complaining party believes is easily identifies him, although he's never identified by name or anything like that, that anybody that is familiar with any of the facts or anything would easily know that the author is talking about this particular individual. Okay, so now in this recent case here, the judge seemed to come down on the favor of the author and say, well, yeah, I get that, but these memoirs and stuff, we give you just a little bit more leeway when you're writing these things because of, A, there's a public interest because of the things that were involved in this particular memoir. And so in this case, looks like the author is gonna get by and not be found to have injured the other party. But these go on a case-by-case basis. You can't guess that any one case is going to go any which direction. And so tread lightly is what I tell all my clients.
Because in this case with this local author, the book actually is very funny. I think people would love the book, but if she insists upon it using the real name of the real person,
well, then you're kind of dead to rights. If you use the real name of the person, you know, truth is always a defense. So if you say things that are salacious, but they're true, then, you know, there you go. You can't do anything about that. The question is whether they're saying things that are not true that hurts the reputation of the individual. And everybody's memory, you know, is always kind of skewed in their own direction. And usually the only two people that were there at the time are the two people who were arguing over it. So it's very hard to prove or disprove.
Okay, well, it's always fun. The questions I get from people who are, you know, authors have so many problems in their lives nowadays. They have to do all this social media. They have to be computer experts because you never know when your computer's going to break down. And if you haven't done the backups, you're in big trouble. But they also have to understand intellectual property. So, Bill Larson, I'm so happy that you come here and open my listeners' eyes to the importance of protecting their social, their intellectual property, and also being careful on social media. I think that's always...
Yeah, be careful on social media, and then be careful where you consume information. If you're going to go look for information on publishing or copywriting and stuff, make sure you go to a valid website like the Copyright Office or one of the more established law firms and stuff, there is a whole bunch of trash information out there that everybody thinks is a so-called expert. So just be very careful when you're consuming information on your rights and copyright and so forth, and don't get sucked into some of these blogs or other websites that are just don't know what they're talking about.
And are often scams. They want you to do your registration through them, do this through them, send them your book, send them. Don't do that. And it always, as you are a member of
Ape Law. Do your research.
Exactly. And you're a member of Ape Law, right? We say, call it Ape Law?
Yeah, AIPLA. That's another great, AIPLA.org is a great organization that represents intellectual property attorneys around the world. So there is all valid information there. So, you know, use the government sites, use the association sites like the AIPLA, the prominent law firms. But if, you know, you don't know who's saying it and they don't have any credentials, I would be very careful about accepting what they say as the gospel.
And never use your brother-in-law who is a lawyer for real estate or any kid who just came out of law school. Because I did that
right.
Once.
That's why I don't defend people that get accused of crimes, because they'd go to jail, because I don't know anything about criminal law.
Exactly. But people, protect your intellectual property rights. They are important, and they are valuable. And look, 35 years later, somebody...
fighting over millions.
Exactly. You never know. And so, again, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. You can find out more about Bill and his work. Just go on the web, and it's Larson & Larson. And patent law, and Bill is always open to your questions, and just send him a message and he'll be happy to talk to you. Right, Bill?
Thanks, Betsy.
Okay.
That's right.
Bye-bye now. Bye. All right. Oh, that's fun. Okay, we're going to have some commercials and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Oh boy, is my guest on? No, my guest is not on. This is going to be one of those funny days. Okay, while I try to contact his publicist, Big Ed, why don't we play that lovely book buzz for Carol J. Perry, because I love Carol J. Perry and I always like to promote her books.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Bells, Spells, and Murders, a Witch City Mystery by author Carol J. Perry. And here's the buzz. Lee Barrett has landed her dream job at Salem's Witch TV. As the new field reporter, she'll be covering events live as they're unfolding. Next on her holiday checklist is an interview with the beloved chairman of a popular walking tour through Salem's historic districts. But it may be his ghost walking this snowy Noel season after Lee finds him murdered in his stately offices, bloody Santa hat askew. With her police detective boyfriend working the case and a witch's brew of suspects, including some bell-ringing Santas, Lee chases down leads aided by her wise cat, Orion, who I love, and some unsettling psychic visions of her own. When a revealing clue leads to another dead body, not even a monster blizzard can stop Lee from inching closer to the truth, and a scoop that could spell her own demise this killer Christmas. But don't take it from me. From RT Book Reviews, an entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry has done it again in Bells, Spells, and Murders, just in time for the holidays. This is Rita Moreau, also known as Radio Rita, reporting for Joy on Paper.
Okay, thank you, Rita. And I am back, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Paul Rosoli. Hi, Paul. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Wait.
Oh, Big Ed is telling me to wait. Hold on. I'm
calling us back.
Okay, he's calling us back. All right, everybody, again, NaNoWriMo people, congratulations. Five of you are getting first edition books from me as a gift for completing NaNoWriMo, and three of you did it early and finished it on the 27th, and I was very proud to hear about that. And who knows, now you're going to have, you're going to have quite a few months of rewriting and working it, and maybe in a year or so, you will be here on Joy on Paper, and you can tell about the fun of doing NaNoWriMo and about how you not only won it, but how you did it, because not everybody can do that. And here we are, Paul Rosoli. Hi, Paul.
Goodbye.
Oh, he says goodbye. Big Ed, are we having fun today? I didn't do that. I didn't say goodbye. I said hello. I'm just. meanwhile, I want to say, oh goodness, there's a wonderful. You know, I always tell you, if you want to learn to write, two things you should do. Well, many things, but two particular things: read poetry and write poetry. Read short stories and write short stories. And if you want some really, really great poems to read, an eclectic assortment of poems, I recommend Jim Lamb's Dark Fruit. It is a wonderful collection of poems, and I love it. And it's available on Kindle. Is it Kindle? Yes, it's available. And it is just wonderful. And I think you will enjoy it. There's artwork in there. The Jim is a very talented artist. As a matter of fact, his art is featured now on Joy on Paper. I have some of his artwork there. And Jim Lamb's Dark Fruit is a lovely collection. There's the funny poems, serious poems, sad poems. It's just a lovely assortment. And poetry is good for your heart. It takes you, gives you a minute to relax and calm down and think about something else. So I hope that you will get Dark Fruit by Jim Lamb, because I love it. It's a wonderful little book, and it's available on Kindle. And I don't know, is it Paul yet here? Not yet.
Go and write the voicemail.
This is not funny. Okay. I don't know. I think I Let me check with the publicist. Why don't you play that song that I have listed there? Do I have a song? Because I love this song.
Throwing in the towel. Sometimes I can't hardly face another day. I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can't even see my way. I ask the question, when things will ever change for me. I am assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. For my good.
Hi.
Hey, hello.
Paul, are you there?
I sure am.
And I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper after all this. And I just want to check, how do you pronounce your last name?
Rosalie.
Oh, I love it. Paul Rosalie. And the name of the book is The Girl and the Tiger. Now, it's not often that I wish that I was on television instead of radio. I love radio. But today, I wish I was on television because I would love to have you in the studio. You are like, you are so gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, and you look like Tarzan. And you have the most adorable smile. The only thing I would worry about is that you would bring an anaconda with you.
You know I would.
I know you would. I never saw such big anacondas as when I was looking at your pictures. I mean, woo!
Yeah, we've been studying them for years down in the Amazon, and actually, I believe that in scientific literature, we have the world record for the largest live caught anaconda in the wild.
How long is it?
Well, the one that we were able to catch was 18 feet 6 inches, but the biggest one that I ever tried to catch was something like 26 feet long, and it was so big that when I jumped on its back, it didn't stop. It just kept going, and it slithered into a lake, and I had to make the decision either stay on the anaconda's back and drown or let go, and I got to lay there as this giant animal went by with my hand on its scales as it disappeared into the water. And it was just, you know, I knew that if we had been able to catch an animal that of that size, you know, you'd be on the front cover of National Geographic, you know, the centennial edition. But it was a privilege to be so close to such an incredible animal.
Well, I mean, I would love to have you in the studio, and you could just do push-ups because, I mean, you just
drive, I could do that.
You drive the girls crazy. Oh, I don't know.
We just do a live stream.
I guess we can't say girls, women. I drive everybody crazy. I can tell you, you look great. You look like Tarzan. They should.
Oh, thank you so much.
They should let you star in a new movie. Woo! It would. As a matter of fact, they should do. I'm telling you. I'll tell everybody who's listening, all your publicists and people. Do a real story with Paul, and people would watch it. I could tell you, you are amazing. Not just because of all that you do for conservation and because you look so great, but you've raised so much money for conservation. You are such a, you know, I know that you've done, what, $5 million to protect for protection in the Amazon, and you do benefits, and you do so much, and it is such important work. And so tell us about this book then. Now, this, of course, is not an anaconda. This is a tiger. And how did you get the idea for this book? And tell us the background of The Girl and the Tiger, because it is a lovely book.
Well, The Girl and the Tiger, you covered so much there. Yes, I've spent 17 years living in the Amazon rainforest,
And through that, interspersed with that, I've spent quite a bit of time living in India. And in that time, I've been able to spend a considerable amount of time out in the jungle with the elephant herds in India. And even though the book is called The Girl and the Tiger, a lot of the focus of the book is the fate of elephants in the modern-day India. And so I actually spent quite some time living with the herds of elephants in the forests. But because there's over a billion people in India, these elephants are increasingly confined into smaller and smaller patches of forest, and sometimes there's not enough food. And when there's not enough food, elephants are big and they're powerful, and they'll come onto farms and they'll steal banana plants or pineapples or something, and the local population does not react very well to that. And so there's a bit of a war going on between humans and wildlife in India. And this book came about because someone I had brought to the Amazon, I'd actually brought a family to the Amazon, and their daughter, who was 11 at the time, who absolutely loved being in the Amazon rainforest, went back home to India, and I got an email from her one time, and it said that she found out that there was an orphaned tiger cub, and she said she was going to go rescue it, and she wanted my advice on what to feed it and whether or not it needed milk. And, you know, she said, "You're the wildlife guy. I just wanted to ask your help." She was 16 by this point. And so I got this email while I was in the jungle, and as far as I knew, this girl was going to go rescue a tiger cub. And so this is really the story of, it's sort of a modern day Jungle Book imagined through these very real events that I've experienced. So it's a novel, but pretty much everything that happens in that book has happened to me in real life.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's... You know, you're a guy who was born in Brooklyn. How did you turn into this?
You know, Superman wasn't born on Earth, and then he ended up liking it here. I don't know how I was born in Brooklyn. I just don't know. I mean, I love it. It feels, you know, of course, it's my family and a part of my home, and I love a good mozzarella. But it's my entire, you know, upper teens and into my, all through my 20s and 30s, I've literally grown up in the jungle. I mean, I dropped out of high school because they couldn't contain me, and I started going to college early. You know, I skipped the first 2 years of high school because they couldn't control me. I was getting into fights with gym teachers, and I bought myself a plane ticket, went to the Amazon, made friends with the local indigenous people, and started getting invited out on hunting trips. And that's my first book. That's Mother of God. Which is about how I fell in with these local guys, and that's how we started Jungle Keepers. And Jungle Keepers now, you know, at the time we was just, you know, we popped our shoes off and we'd go out into the bush and go looking for anacondas and go on hunting trips with the native guys. I didn't realize, you know, the day they turned to me and they said, we need you to help us protect this river. I said, well, what do you mean? I'm 17 years old. I work at the YMCA back in New York. Like, I don't know what you mean, but at that time, you know, people talk about, you know, fake it till you make it or imposter syndrome and all this stuff. And there's this period when you're finding your path in life that you don't know you've become that thing yet, you know? So at that time I was just some kid. And then you, little by little, you become, I realized that my responsibility was to the forest and to the animals and to tell these stories. Because of the animals, you know, they can't put on a suit and go address the United Nations. Their forest gets burned down. They have nowhere to live. They get shot by poachers. And we're losing species. We're losing species almost as bad as when the dinosaurs left the earth. They're calling it the sixth extinction, and it's all because of us. And all we have to do to stop it is stop cutting down habitat. All we have to do is nothing, not cut down trees. I was just with elephants in Africa last week, and they are so incredibly emotional and so much smarter than people think, that it would shock most people how smart these animals are. They never forget a person. They know if you're excited, if you're sad, if you're on your cycle. They know if you're pregnant. They know everything about us before we do. They know what our blood sugar levels are. Their smell is so incredible. But we really have the opportunity to save these species. And so it was really the Amazon that catapulted all this into existence. And now we have Jungle Keepers, which is collaborating with the indigenous people as well as bringing in conservationists from all over the world, from every type of background. And that's ordinary people as well as big tech billionaires and scientists. And yeah, we're protecting 50,000 acres and millions of heartbeats. And trying to change the narrative from, like, doom and gloom and, like, you know, the end of every David Attenborough documentary. He's like, you know, spends an hour telling you about the beautiful animals, and at the end he's like, yes, but unfortunately, it will soon all be gone, you know, and they leave you in your living room ready to jump off a cliff. No. We're the last generation that has the chance to turn this around. A lot of these animals are still here. It's not too late. And that's what my mission in life is, to speak for those animals, to save those wild places, and to make sure that, and then what happens as a result, those wild places are what creates the clean water and fresh air that we breathe and drink and need to survive. So we're in this together, and it's a very important moment in history. So that's what all my writing, all my books, all my, even my push-ups, that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, you know, I really, when I was reading about you, when I read the book, and then I was reading about you, and I kept thinking, because before the pandemic, I remember I had another author on, and we were talking about how they were killing so many elephants in Africa. Just,
oh my God!
I was on air, and I just started crying. Thought of it. I mean, I have a 10-foot giraffe outside my front door, at my front door. His name is George, and he's 10 feet tall. He's made of wood, and I every morning,
really?
Every morning I say, good morning, George. I love George. I love giraffes. Ever since I was a kid, I loved giraffes. And every morning I say, good morning, George. And I, as a matter of fact, I had hoped to go to Africa. And because the stories of them killing these elephants, I'm starting to cry. I can't believe believe people would kill an elephant. I can't make room for them. Just exactly as you said, don't cut down the trees. There's enough space for people and elephants if we want. And that's why I think you have to, I don't think you're doing enough. I mean, fine, you raised 5 million or 50 million. You have to get even a wider audience. You should be on television every week. You should have a television series. I'm telling you, some Hollywood people listen to me and some television people listen to my program. Really, get Paul on television instead of the stupid reality shows or the ones that have no point. You need somebody like Paul who's passionate and who wants to save these animals.
Well, I mean, I'm doing all I can. It depends on other people opening up those doors. I'm you know, my entire existence and time here on Earth is for this mission. So, well, it's just a matter of if that's what they want.
Well, Paul, you are doing a tremendous, tremendous job. Now, do you have a website where you want people to go, or people can help you, or people can get in contact with you?
So this is a crazy, crazy moment in our journey. We just started a new campaign. The thing is this, if 300,000 people donated $100, now all of us, you know, for some of us, that's your Starbucks bill for the month. A lot of people can afford $100, and if we all came together and just did that, we could save an entire tributary in the Amazon. I'm talking tens of millions of wild heartbeats, undiscovered medicines, indigenous cultures, endangered species. There's so much here, not to mention one of the greatest weapons we have against climate change, which is the forest itself. And so we're trying to promote this. It's www.junglekeepers.org, and we're launching this campaign. We're starting it. We're taking it to COP27, the biodiversity summit that's going to be in Montreal. We're taking this as international as we can. We're going crazy with it. This is our chance to save a river, to stop feeling bad about the environment and do something about it. And so that's, to me, it's that. It's get up out of your chair, take part in this, come out and see us in the field, come visit us. And by the way, you should definitely come out and visit the work that we've been doing in Africa through this organization called VetPaw, and you should have them on your show, because these are incredible guys, rescuing elephants and endangered black rhinos in South Africa. Absolutely incredible, because they're using United States veterans after their service, post 9/11 veterans, and they're getting them out into the field where you have black rhinos. There's only 5,000 black rhinos left because they're being killed for their horns so ruthlessly, murdered, that they're in danger of going extinct. And so they're using, VetPaw is using these veterans who have this tactical knowledge and the ability to actually protect the rhinos on the ground.
Oh.
And so you're in a place where the rhinos are safe and the elephants are safe, and it's absolutely, it will restore a part of your heart that you lost. I guarantee you. You got to check these guys out.
That is brilliant use for veterans, who's yes. many who suffer from PTSD and they don't
yep.
feel a purpose in life. You're giving, I mean, this is giving them a purpose, a joy. This is brilliant. I will contact this group. I will help promote.
I'll make the introduction.
I would just love to have them on and talk about it, because I love to work with veterans. One of the things I'd like to do is to help them to start writing, not necessarily
yeah.
a book about what they went through, but a book, perhaps a cookbook, a book for their children, a romance, anything just to help them have other things to think about. But this idea
yeah.
of getting them involved in protecting wildlife is brilliant. And some of them could actually do push-ups with you.
Oh, absolutely. We get along just fine. They're all a bunch of big, tough boys over there.
okay.
But yes, on Instagram, at Paul Rosalie, TikTok, at Jungle Keeper, junglekeepers.org. Definitely also check out VetPaw. There's so much exciting stuff going on, and we're trying more than ever to make it so that everybody can be a part of this. Everybody can come out to the places where we're doing this conservation work, take part in it. But we also need those donations, small donations. Everyone can afford it, and then you can feel better for the rest of the year. You don't got to feel bad about the environment. You know what I mean? Like, scratch that one off, and you get a sick T-shirt. You get these beautiful T-shirts that I designed myself.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get that. And I would definitely get that if I want the T-shirt. Are you on the T-shirt with doing push-ups? I don't know.
We'll make a special members version of that.
Okay. Well, I think those will sell out. Anyway, the name of the book is The Girl and the Tiger, and that's available on Amazon. But check out the Jungle Keepers, everybody. Paul, it's been absolute joy talking to you today.
Wonderful talking to you, too.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Whoa. What? Yeah. Paul?
Where I can, like, find this interview and then share it on social media?
Yeah. I'll send you a link later today. Okay?
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. Thank
okay.
you so, so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
All right. Bye.
All right. Oh, I didn't want to hang up on him. Hey, Paul. I will put his picture up on my website. This guy is gorgeous. Amazing. Anyway, what do I normally say? Anyway, it's all about writing. I'm so happy that everybody is writing. And say something nice to somebody today. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because Big Ed managed. We got through it, Ed, right? Okay? We did okay? Okay, he's saluting me. I'm saluting him, because I should have been a general. Anyway, everybody, think about Jungle Keepers. You don't need all that junk food. Put $100 a month and take it and go to Jungle Keepers and donate some money. Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.